A podcast of the cinema.
So yeah, no, you went with me. We were like Christmas shopping. We went to Beverly Hills. We went to the Marimekko store. And you have zero memory of this.
Talk about in media res. This is the middle of a conversation we were just having, and now we're just going to keep having it. Okay. I remember going to the Marimekko store. I'm sorry.
We actually bought a Christmas tree ornament there. It was the Christmas. It was as on brand as it could be. It was a Marimekko fabric, puffy, soft Christmas tree shaped ornament for our Christmas tree.
I remember us going into that schwanky, like,
it was on sale
place in Beverly Hills after Christmas.
No, it was after Christmas.
That's what I meant, and getting it.
I say we were Christmas shopping, but we Christmas shop after Christmas.
Yes.
We were buying Christmas ornaments on sale. It was marked down to $6.
Wow. See, I remember getting like some metallic thing, but I don't remember.
That was the same day.
I don't remember going to the Marimekko store, but I believe you. I trust you when you tell me these things because I have a terrible memory for this sort of stuff.
I am the historian of this relationship.
It's true. And you are Dave White, film critic for The Wrap and other places.
Just
different
the,
places.
Honestly, just right now, just The Wrap.
Well, you are also the
I mean, technically, I am the film critic for linoleum-knife.com.
Yes.
But I've been very busy, and I haven't been writing reviews for that website.
You've been the keeper of the Linoleum Knife Patreon.
There's the thing. That's the busy part of what I've been doing.
You're the fulfillment department.
Yeah.
And I'm Alonzo Duraldi, film reviews editor at The Wrap, and film critic and TV recapper for What the Flick.
So, yeah, we're both film critics. Welcome to our podcast if you are new. What else just should they know?
Apparently they need to know things about the Marimekko store.
We're married. That's, if you couldn't guess,
yeah.
Two guys talking about going to the Marimekko store together.
This came up
because... That's not exclusive to gays.
No, but it's a
you
trigger.
You might assume...
Two
dudes together in the Marimekko store asking each other, do you think this will look good?
On the tree?
On the tree, yeah. Like, that's...
No,
you can figure that out.
This is vaguely coming to mind, but I mainly remember just going into that giant, the jewelry store and getting the after
It was
Christmas
a lovely day. We ate lunch at Bouchon.
Well, that was...
Bouchon. Where the everything tastes good there.
Yeah, Beverly Hills is generally...
And you might see one of the shots of sunset
yeah.
there, which just makes it also great.
Beverly Hills is not generally my jam, but every so often it's nice to have a...
Beverly Hills is a trash can.
Yeah.
But and not... I mean, it's a very pretty trash can.
Yes.
But
a glamorous, world-famous trash
you
can.
You don't want to spend a lot of time there. Number one, the parking is very expensive and hard to
True,
find.
Yes.
Number two... people are in your way and generally terrible there.
Yeah, tourists are not good shoppers.
No.
Because they stand around and block paths and things.
Although they do have the flagship Brooks Brothers store there. It's very big.
Is that what a flag... I thought a flagship was like the first one or the main one.
They referred to themselves as the flagship store of
really?
Los Angeles.
Oh, well, of Los Angeles, okay. Like you know, when we talked about... Frederick Wiseman's The Store.
I understand
like,
that.
That's the OG Neiman Marcus.
What a good segue you just made. Why don't you tell people what you're talking about and why it's of importance to the people who listen to this show.
Frederick Wiseman, of course, great documentary filmmaker, is going to be honored this year by the Academy, finally, for his decades of innovative and powerful documentary filmmaking. Made a movie called The Store in 1982 about the Neiman Marcus flagship store in Dallas, Texas, over the Thanksgiving and Christmas season. It's a fascinating glimpse at sort of American mercantilism. And
good word.
Thank you. And it's the one documentary that's featured in my holiday film book, Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas. And it's also going to be one of the LK Selector items. And what, you may ask, is LK Selector? If you are a member of our Patreon club, patreon.com/linoleumknife, we offer many levels of membership, beginning at a scant breezy $4 a month.
That's my favorite.
That gets you LKTV, our podcast of the television, going all the way up to $20 a month, which entitles you to tons of benefits, including LK Selector, which means...
These are not benefits. These are straight-up prizes. Premiums. You get way too much stuff.
We really should have rethought this thing.
It doesn't matter.
Other people are making a lot more money versus what they're outputting.
It's funny. It's an actual conversation that I had with someone a week ago. Wow, you guys sure make a lot of money on your Patreon thing. And I'm like, and it all goes back into buying merch and postage.
Yeah, we got to work on that, because that was the idea is that we send you cool stuff and we still like make a profit. But you know
what I like? I like that we are dumb.
Well, it's part of our charm.
Because what it makes...
We just play our theme music out of a boombox.
It makes the club members happy.
I suppose so.
They get things. They get lovely things.
And if you're at the $20 level, you get the LK Selector, which means that Dave and I will...
Four times a year.
...will choose...
Or, in this case, for year one, four times this autumn and winter.
Yes, crammed into the end of the year. We'll choose really groovy items that we will send to you. And
we choose them. They're things that we love.
Yes.
And then we set a date and we all discuss.
We'll have a Google Hangout and talk about them. And so one of them that we're sending out, or that's in the process of being sent out right now, we'll have the discussion in December for the holidays, is Frederick Wiseman's The Store.
Now, some of y'all already have your copy of The Store.
Oh, okay.
A few of you, I've still got like a dozen or so people that I have to get out the last bunches to this week.
Does everybody have their first selector item?
Well, everyone, if you don't have either, they come together.
Oh, I see.
I've been dribs and drabsing on the first LK selector item. I've been sending those out in little pocket, little bursts of three and four all summer long. But then I finally got a stack, and now they're all going out, and they are mostly going out with the
Store
with DVD. The Store DVD. If you are not a member of the LK Club, then none of this means anything to you. All it means is that you want to do that.
Totally.
Here's what it breaks down to. Here's the math. If you're at the $4 level, as I said, my personal favorite, you're paying $1 per week for one podcast. That means you're paying me 50 cents a week to podcast for you, which I think is what I'm worth. So,
and LKTV, we are busting our hump with this new fall season.
Again,
I watch.
We make statements, and then we decide, oh, yes, we can do that.
Yeah.
And then we say, oh, this is so much more than we imagined it was going to be.
We watched Bull and Notorious for our LK subscribers.
And like 10 other shows.
Yes.
We were in front of a television
lot
this week. Anyway, if you haven't subscribed yet, go do it. If you have, we have decided to thank you by name. Here we go.
Woo.
Now.
Not all 245 of you.
There are currently 245 of you people. You beautiful, beautiful, cash-filled people who've now filled us with cash. Detail Bear. I don't know this person's name. Even his email, I assume it's a he. Even his email is just detailbear@blah blah. Yeah.
He's a man with an online identity.
Ryan,
or woman.
Ryan Barker. Martin Johansson. Janet Uter. Listen, if I'm screwing up your name, you can message me on Patreon and spell it out phonetically. I'm probably screwing up your name. Lady Knight the Brave, friend of the show, who writes to us.
She is the other LK.
Aaron White, Ethan Barella, the letter Z. I'm not joking.
Just Z or the letter Z?
No, Z.
Z, okay. Yeah.
Eric Yoner. Oh, and here's a name I can't pronounce. Real Rail Gauthier. Gauthier.
Gauthier.
Right. Sorry.
All right. We don't have to make it a giant list every week, but we should thank these
to you.
Folks.
Thanks, y'all. Are great. Y'all are great for doing this.
We appreciate it.
These are the $4 people, too.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
So we appreciate you guys as much as anyone else.
It's a fact.
Yes. You all stepped up.
Now there's movies.
There are.
Happening.
Weirdly, for September, two of them were good. Like, well, I mean,
talk about the one that you said was good that I haven't seen yet because I was putting off. I'm sorry, I'm pushing a thing. I didn't want to go to see Storks.
I didn't blame you for not wanting to see Storks because the marketing campaign is terrible. And as someone pointed out, it's Arthur Christmas all over again because, you know, it's this really charming and funny animated movie with a terrible ad campaign. Yeah. And it subsequently had a fairly disappointing first weekend. What are you going to do? Anyway, this is written and directed or written and co-directed by Nicholas Stoller, who wrote the two Muppets movies and, was involved with, the 5-Year Engagement and Forgetting Sarah Marshall. And then co-directed with, and I don't have his name in front of me, but a Pixar veteran who I guess did the heavy lifting on the animation side. It is a movie about storks who now deliver for an online company called Cornerstore.com. They got out of the baby business 18 years ago because this one stork, voiced by Danny Trejo, got too fixated on his human package and broke the little...
What?
The baby.
Oh.
That came out wrong. Got fixated on the baby, broke the little gizmo that had her address on it, and so, you know, she was stuck there with the storks. So she's now 18. Her name is Tulip, and she...
That's a good name.
Yeah. Or the orphan Tulip, they often call her. And she means well, but breaks things. And there's a very competent delivery guy named Junior, voiced by Andy Samberg, who is about to get a big promotion from his boss, Kelsey Grammer. But he has to fire Tulip and send her back to the humans. He can't quite bring himself to do that, so instead he sends her off to the letters department, which is basically moribund now that they don't accept letters from, you know, kids and parents asking for babies. But lo and behold...
Is there mercantilism moribund as well?
No, the mercantilism thrives. Meanwhile, a kid in the suburbs wishes that his parents would give him a baby brother because they are Ty Burrell and Jennifer Aniston and are obsessed with their real estate business.
So this is a movie where storks bring babies and it's not like a thing where the kids all have to learn, oh, this isn't real. Or...
No.
The storks really bring the babies.
Yeah.
And drop...
They just haven't done it in a long time.
Do you drop the baby in the cabbage patch, or do you bring the baby from... Does the baby grow in the cabbage patch, and then the stork brings you the baby?
I think the cabbage patch and the stork are two separate...
I don't think so.
Versions.
There
are no cabbages in this telling of the story. Anyway, it's really funny, and really sharp, and the sentimental stuff is lovely... And I really enjoyed this movie, and I was shocked because I was not expecting anything out of it. I thought it was just going to be junk, but I laughed a lot, and I laughed like that sort of hearty surprise, oh my God, I didn't even see that coming at all kind of laugh. Yeah, I really recommend this movie, and I recommend that you see it quickly because apparently it's not making money.
Yeah, I stayed home the night you went to see it. I was looking at the family circle. That's a magazine.
Were you getting craft tips for fall?
Old-timey magazine. Well, what happened was...
There's not enough decoupage in this house, Dave White.
I was on MarthaStewart.com.
Okay.
Looking up a recipe. Because she's a go-to recipe. She's a go-to website.
Sure, yeah.
And this thing popped up. Somehow I wound up on MarthaStewart.com's mailing list, and this thing popped up that said...
Somehow...
I don't know. They got my email.
Uh-huh.
I didn't ask them anything. I didn't give them my email. They just found it.
Really? Didn't you subscribe to to at least one of the magazines?
I'm getting to that.
Okay. But, I mean, wouldn't that have your email from that?
No.
All right.
No, I didn't subscribe to anything before. You go to the website enough times and they get your email somehow.
No, we used to get that her little digesty thing with the everyday recipes.
Or whatever. Oh, that's right. When my niece was selling magazine subscriptions, I was getting Everyday Food, which was a Martha Stewart magazine.
Yes.
I don't think it exists anymore.
Oh, bummer.
Yeah. And this story is so interesting.
It's riveting.
They sent me an email. The little pop-up thing said, you can get a 1-year subscription to Martha Stewart Living and Family Circle and Better Homes and Gardens.
Please take these things off our hands.
And you can check it. No, you can get this subscription for $8. You can subscribe to 3 magazines for a full year for $8 total. And I thought, sure, I got $8. And I want Martha Stewart Living. And it'll be weird to get Family Circle and Better Homes and Gardens in the mailbox with my name on it. I'll do that. What if I'm missing a cool recipe from Family Circle that I can make in 20 minutes using things I have in my pantry?
And a case of Campbell's cream of mushroom soup.
By my pantry, I mean those 2 shelves under the counter that everything is crammed into.
Right.
In our tiny vintage kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
So, I had a stack of Family Circles because it's really boring. It's the worst magazine. I was looking through for recipes. I didn't really find any. I mean, they do have the ones you put a can of cream of mushroom soup in.
Right, of course.
But it's a staple for family. Listen, those are tasty.
I know, yeah.
Yeah.
Remember when Rosie O'Donnell...
Margie Rocklin is screaming right now. She's listening going, no cans of cream of mushroom soup.
Remember when Rosie O'Donnell tried to revive McCall's?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think, didn't she kill it?
Pretty much, yeah.
It's gone, right?
Yeah, she drove the final stake into the heart.
Yeah, I guess back in the day, these magazines meant something to the homemaker person.
Oh, yeah. My mom used to get Ladies Home Journal and McCall's monthly.
Well, you know.
Not so much Better Homes and Gardens.
I'll tell you, Better Homes and Gardens is even less interesting than Family Circle.
I could see that.
Because it's just about, I thought there were going to be some, I mean, there are a couple recipes. All I care about is recipes. There are a couple recipes in there each month. But it's mostly about, here's a craft project you can do. Here's your new interior thing. Here's how to fix up your guest room.
Foyer.
You know, yeah.
I think we're supposed to be supporting Family Circle because I think they did some.
Well, we are. We subscribe.
I know, but they
got at least $2
in the last year or two. They had some article about families, and they included some gay dads or something.
Oh no! Yeah, I saw
and a
that.
Bunch of their subscribers flipped out.
Oh no, I saw that actually. I saw that article, and I passed through, and I was like, "Oh, gays!" And just kept going. I wasn't even thinking.
Incidentally, at the end of Storks, when they
movies
when they're delivering when they're delivering babies, like the babies get dropped into a lot of households, most of which are by the Storks.
No. What opening in the house does the baby come through?
Usually the parents are standing in front and the storks plop in their hands.
From a tall height? Do they are they hovering 100 feet over the parents?
No, they come down low.
Oh, all right.
Anyway, but mostly it's, moms and dads, but there's some single moms and a couple of dads and a couple of moms.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
In the movie?
In the movie.
Well, now you know it's from hell.
I thought that was a very nice little touch.
Well, that's just life.
Yeah.
That's actual life.
But, it's cool when kids' movies can just sort of acknowledge these things. And
these things happen. Yeah. Well, it's the thing when now kids come to school and say, yeah, my 2 moms, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And no one's making a big secret about it anymore, and people are flipping out over that too.
Well, I'm and they're still flipping out about it when they do it in Alabama,
Right, right. I mean, I know people who would like to have their children never know that gays exist.
Yes.
So, that's
But one can only hope that their children will be.
One can hope.
Hipper than they are.
All right, I saw one you didn't see.
You did.
I saw The Lovers and the Despot.
Mm-hmm.
It's a documentary from these two guys, Robert Cannon and Ross Adams.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really, really bizarre. The story is bizarre. The filmmaking is straightforward and conventional. So, Kim Jong-il, former tyrannical dictator of North Korea.
Right. Before handing over the reins to his equally tyrannical son.
Before dying.
Yes.
And handing over, yeah, the country to Kim Jong-un. Kim Jong-il loved movies. And yet he hated North Korean movies. His particular criticism was, they have so much crying in them. This is, of course, stated without any irony. Gee, why are people in North Korea crying so much?
Why might that be? It's funny, the whole thing about the idea of Kim Jong-il, sorry, being a movie fan, I guess Kim Jong-un is a sports fan,
yeah.
The last of the Medved's books about sort of Hollywood excesses, the Hollywood Hall of Shame, where they talk about the sort of most expensive flops. There's a chapter about this movie I'd never heard of called Kohlberg,
yeah.
Which was basically Joseph Goebbels's attempt to make like the Nazi Gone with the Wind.
Really?
Yeah. It's a fascinating story. And like the amount of money and manpower and resources that were diverted to the making of this film in the waning days of the Third Reich.
Right.
When they were trying to hold off the Russians and stuff. It's an amazing story. So yeah, apparently this is a thing among despots, that they like movies and they wonder why the ones coming out of their own oppressed countries aren't better.
Well, this is the same situation confronting Christian cinema when you drive artists out of your sphere.
Or into the gulag.
Or into somewhere else. You know, you don't have your artists anymore.
Right.
So it becomes a problem. So he had an idea to how to fix it. Kidnap some people from South Korea.
Press them into service.
And make them make movies. So he set his sights on basically the Brad and Angelina of South Korea. Shin Sang-ok, he was a director,
mm-hmm.
prolific director. And in the words of his wife, Choi Yun-hee, who was a big movie star,
uh-huh.
She called him the wild horse.
Really?
Yeah, because he was passionate and unpredictable and just would go off and all he cared about was making films. And having sex with other women that weren't Choi Yun-hee, which is why she divorced him.
Right.
And then, I guess news of the divorce had not reached Kim Jong-il,
because
he kidnapped both of them.
Yeah. Now, that's a rom-com setup.
Well, hang on. I just hit the mic, but unintentionally, because I was trying to hit a fly. So he kidnaps Choi Yun-hee,
mm-hmm.
and when she arrives, and now this is all based on interviews with her, she is still alive,
mm-hmm.
she's 89 years old, she lives in Los Angeles,
ah.
and she said, oh, he just said, well, hello, it's good to meet you. Like nothing had happened. Meanwhile, she's been drugged, lured to Hong Kong,
mm-hmm.
with the promise of a film. One of Kim Jong-il's secret agents captures her, drugs her, puts her on a cargo ship. She winds up in North Korea, and he's like, hello, it's nice to meet you. Like, nothing weird is happening here,
right.
at all. You're now my guest, who cannot leave.
Permanently.
Like, he gives her a gardening. He gives her a garden to tend, and he gives her books on, you know, communism to learn, and he keeps her just for 4 years, like basically doing nothing. And in her words, now she's 89, of course, she's like, and he treated me with utmost respect. I'm like, yeah, I was his prisoner, but he treated me with utmost respect. Meanwhile, Shin Sang-ok,
well, that could have gone in a lot of other ways.
Yeah, well, so. True, yes, yeah. Shin Sang-ok, he gets kidnapped, and they immediately throw him in prison. And, like, try to brainwash him.
Mm.
And he's in prison for 4 years.
Oy.
With no, like,
So they don't get immediately put to work.
No. No, no, no. They let him cook for a little while. Then he reunites them, and they're like, funny to see you here. And then he says, now you make movies. He gave them budgets. He gave them artistic freedom, which is crazy.
Here's our new film. Please help get us out of here.
Oh, no, 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 no. It gets better. It gets better. They make 17 movies in 2 years.
Oh, my God.
In two years.
Feature films.
Yeah.
Wow.
And he sends them out to international film festivals. He puts them on TV. Their children in South Korea are like, our parents abandoned us and defected to North Korea.
Oh, my God.
That's what their parents, the kids think this.
Uh-huh.
Because the interviews with the adult children are in this film, too.
Uh-huh.
And they decide to hatch a plan to escape. And for backup, they start secretly taping all their conversations with him.
With Kim Jong-il.
Uh-huh. So you hear the tapes.
Uh-huh.
Then they give one of the tapes, and they wait so patiently, because they're like, if we screw this up, we're dead.
Right.
They're all smiles everywhere they go. They go to these film festivals. They're like, hello, we're so happy to be here with Kim Jong-il making his films. Hello, we defected and we're so happy. They're secretly taping the conversations. They are waiting, 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 waiting. While they're waiting and making movies and taping conversations, they fall back in love. Everything I'm telling you, I guess, is a spoiler, but this story is so crazy, I just have to tell you it. And watching the film anyway is still fascinating. In 1986, they give a cassette tape to a film critic, a Korean film critic. A film critic saves the day!
Yay, film critics. We are the best.
They somehow wind up near some Americans who are there to, like, intelligence people, CIA. The CIA is involved now. And they escape to the United States.
Wow.
And the tapes come out, and they're like, because all during this time, the South Korean media is like, they abandoned their children and they left South Korea and they're awful people. Yeah. But the tapes are, I mean, the tapes are, they're right there.
Yeah.
And Kim Jong-il on these tapes is like, you know, this all just wasn't, this was a big misunderstanding. And my staff, they did this. Yeah.
Well,
it's nuts. And
it is streaming.
It is streaming where? iTunes?
In the United States, yeah, iTunes, Amazon. Yeah.
Okay. It's opened theatrically in big cities.
Right.
But it's streaming as well. So you can watch this today if you want to. And honestly, you should. It's a wild story. And very moving to listen to Choi Yun-hui. Shin Sang-ok, he died in 2006. But they got remarried. And listening to her talk, and she's very moving to listen to when she's talking about all this. And the kids, because the kids, you know, the kids are my age, basically.
Right.
And your age. And they're like, we thought our parents had run away. Like, we thought they didn't want us anymore. Like, it's brutal. Yeah. But yeah, you should watch this. Okay. There's nothing innovative in terms of documentary form here. It's talking heads and archival footage and all that stuff. But the story is incredible.
All right.
So, yeah.
Less incredible is The Magnificent Seven.
Sure.
Which is a thing.
Say your thing. I've got ideas, but...
All right.
You and I are coming to this from different angles, I think.
Maybe. Okay. So it is the second remake of The Seven Samurai. It's a remake of the 1960 Western, The Magnificent Seven. Denzel Washington plays a warrant officer who is pressed into service by Haley Bennett when her husband, Matt Bomer, right?
Yeah. It's funny. He's Can we just say it? It happens in the first
part. Yeah, Matt Bomer gets killed, like, at the very beginning.
And then, like, immediately. And then the credits roll, and then you see his name. And you're like, he's already dead.
That's it? What? Matt Bomer, R.I.P. We'll remember him. Because, now, in the previous versions, bandits were going to come and steal things from the town.
Yes.
This time around, it is a robber baron played by Peter Sarsgaard with not a drop of subtlety.
No.
Who is there
He's literally sniveling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty much. And so he's there to take the entire town because he wants to, like, strip mine the whole thing. And so Washington pulls together a team of guys who are good with guns and knives and axes and arrows to come help save this town. And directed by Antoine Fuqua.
Yeah.
Who was okay. I like some of his movies better than others. I enjoyed The Equalizer.
Yes.
But, you know, I don't know. This movie just... There's a lot of potential there that doesn't ever quite come to fruition. I was generally sort of like, yeah, this is all right. You know, there are some big sweeping moments of, like, you know, the guys riding across the plain under the big sky. You know, the sort of shots you thought you were going to get in The Hateful Eight before you realized you were going to spend 3 hours stuck inside a cabin.
Right.
But then, like, the action sequences are edit in that contemporary style that's so annoying. And it's not exciting. It feels too long. I don't know. I was kind of meh about it. What were your thoughts?
I had a mechanical good time.
Fair enough.
I believe that is kind of Antoine Fuqua's jam.
Huh.
He likes men making action.
Yes, he does.
And he doesn't care about much more than that, it seems, because the men who go see these films and enjoy them also don't seem to care very much about that.
Okay. So this is straight guy cinema.
He delivers what he wants to his audience that wants the same thing. I was not bored, and I believe that in terms of actual, like I say, mechanical filmmaking, mm-hmm. this delivers what it sets out to deliver. People are in trouble. Here come some baddish good guys.
Right.
Who are going to fight the very bad guys. And they will win. Because that's what happens at the end of a movie like this.
Right.
The very bad guys are decimated by the baddish good guys. In terms of the distillation from Seven Samurai to Magnificent Seven, the first, to this Magnificent Seven, it is a steady evaporation of meaning. Returning for a moment to Seven Samurai.
Yes.
That is a film. Let me say it differently. That is a masterpiece that has as much to do with the moral obligations of individuals in their community. It has as much to do with that as it does with
outsiders.
The outsiders coming in that you have to fight. Mm-hmm. Leaving aside all of its formal innovations and beauty and just material greatness, it has a story with many characters. A lot of these characters are conflicted people who approach this crisis from a variety of standpoints and with their own needs and their own troubles. Toshiro Mifune.
Yes.
Who they refer to in the film as a wild dog.
Right.
He's funny and he's furious and he's heartbreaking and he's so much in that movie. Oh gosh, I'm gonna blank on his name. Ikiru. Takashi Shimura. Thank you, brain. He's this really honorable man who approaches this problem with the weight of his life on top of him, and yet his understanding that as a person who's just been sort of a fighter and a killer his whole life, this is his chance to do something that's genuinely all good. Then you get to learn about the townspeople, you know?
Yeah, because Seven Samurai is three and a half hours long.
Yeah. I posted my favorite moment from Seven Samurai on Instagram, not on the Linoleum Cast. If you want to follow us on Instagram, it's Linoleum Cast. Sometimes I'm too lazy to post to Linoleum Cast because it involves signing out of my account and signing into Linoleum Cast.
Oh, the horror.
And that takes a lot of thumb work. So sometimes I stick to my D. Leland White account, which is what I did this week. And mm-hmm. I took a picture of my favorite moment in Seven Samurai and I posted it to Instagram. And it's the moment when Takashi Shimura says, "By protecting others, you save yourself." Which, to me, is the movie. Mm. It is about overcoming your own selfishness and your own worry about yourself and what's going to happen to you and will you have to sacrifice something for the good of the people in your life. So I post that to Instagram. Likes, 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 likes. One comment from Manola, who says, "Kind of long, though."
Well, we on What the Flick this week, we talked about Seven Samurai and the original Magnificent Seven.
Yes.
And I came out about the fact that...
That you think it's boring.
I've never been into Seven Samurai. Like, I get why it's important. I understand why it's a masterpiece. I understand why it's formally influential and all that stuff. But as a movie to sit down and watch, I have never enjoyed it.
It's one of the greatest films of all time.
So everyone says. And I don't take that away from anybody. And I don't say they're wrong. I'm just saying, for me, it doesn't... Eh.
I have no qualms about saying that you are wrong.
Fine.
Okay.
You and everybody else. I don't care. Actually, several people on YouTube were kind of like...
Oh, really? The YouTube people?
The YouTube people were saying that I had a
problem. I love listening to YouTube people.
I know. But I'm just saying, I'm not alone out there.
I stand in solidarity with so many YouTube people. Those commenters on YouTube, they're the best.
In any event, if you...
They got your back.
If you love this movie, you're right. I'm wrong. It's fine. I'm not. That's not what this is about, but I'm just admitting...
It's a masterpiece.
It's admitting it's a movie that's never meant anything.
It's a masterpiece. Okay, so... So you take that, and then you... 5 years, whatever, later...
Yeah.
You make The Magnificent Seven, which is wildly entertaining.
Yes, a fun Hollywood
movie. I love that movie. And there is some there's some moral heft to that film.
Well,
not as complicated or complex.
One of the things we talked about was that, you know, whereas Kurosawa was inspired by John Ford in certain elements of Seven Samurai, I think there are elements of Seven Samurai that then bled back into Ford's work, especially the whole notion of the hero being exiled from society.
Yeah.
You know, because The Searchers came a couple years after Seven Samurai. So this notion that, like, you can come in, save the day, and then not be welcomed by the people that you just saved, you know, is there. And so then you've got the sort of Western spin on Magnificent Seven from John Sturges.
And it's a great film, but it's not really the same thing.
Yeah. It's more, they more borrow the plot than the themes, you know.
And then there's this.
Yeah.
Which has no moral opinion, really, about anything other than that bad guys are bad.
Right.
And you could say, you could argue, that the ideas of business coming in to destroy communities is relevant.
Oh, sure.
And real. And that and should be in this script because it's in this script in a very, here it is, sort of way.
It's co-written by Nick Pizzolatto, who did True Detective, and I forget who the other writer was.
But they don't ever talk about that, and they don't ever go deeper into that.
Not really.
At all. And you never learn about any of the people in the town except for Haley Bennett.
Yeah.
And you barely know anything about her other than that she is a woman who has decided that she is not going to hide in the basement of the school. She is instead going to fight and fire her gun.
Yes.
Yeah. You learn very little about a lot of the seven.
Yeah, I mean...
You don't know if they're ever really building their team properly. You don't see enough of them working with the townspeople to help them fight. You see some of it. You see a montage, second act montage, of them sort of rigging up things in the town, like Home Alone style.
Gonna
clock people in the head and
but
stuff.
But that's in all of the versions.
And that's in all of the versions, traps. But it takes... It's so much more detailed than Seven Samurai. Now we're going to do this on this side.
Again,
now
we're going to do this. Hours.
And it's incredible. After watching Seven Samurai, I feel like I've indulged in a very large multi-course meal. And I feel like after watching Magnificent Seven, that I had the concession stand mozzarella sticks with a grape soda from the 100 flavor soda machine. Which I did.
I was going to say, you love that. I don't know, that's not a complaint for you.
And so, again, during the time of eating the mozzarella sticks from the concession stand and drinking the grape soda, I'm thinking, this sure is fun. Then when it's over, you think, I ate that. It meant nothing to me. But it was good eating while I ate it. This is the movie that's good eating while you're eating it.
The movie makes a Fast and Furious style attempt to be multicultural in its casting.
Yes.
But then really doesn't give the people of color who aren't Denzel Washington that much to do. And even Denzel Washington really doesn't get like a big character backstory until Act 3.
Yeah.
Like late in the game, we find out what the whole point of all this was.
You don't learn about
him.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Chris Pratt is okay.
He's Chris Pratty.
But his Chris Prattiness seems a little tamped down in a weird way.
Well, yeah, they can't have him be 2016. There's so much in this movie that is 2016. Yeah. The way they speak to each other, you know, they say things like, "Well, I guess we're bonding now." And I'm like, no.
I did like
Maya Rudolph as Oprah waving my finger, no at you. That's not what people said in the 19th century.
I did like Ethan Hawke's sort of Cajun courtliness.
Here's what I genuinely loved without reservation, no complaints, is great. Vincent D'Onofrio has chosen for this film as an acting style to become fatter and weirder. And that is brilliant and beautiful.
Yeah, he has gone full method on this one.
He talks like this through most of the film. He has a very high-pitched voice. It's strange.
Somebody pointed out that it was, to quote Blazing Saddles, authentic frontier gibberish. And it's funny because early on when like the Peter Sarsgaard people are like shooting everyone and setting fire to the church and being all terrible, I turned to Christy, who was sitting next to me, and again, quoting Blazing Saddles, I said, "Have you ever seen such villainy?"
It is as though the Magnificent Six said, "You know what we're missing? A fat man from outer space. Let's bring one of those in to help us fight the bad businessmen."
I really liked Ethan Hawke, and this was my big shocker takeaway.
Yeah.
The whole movie, I'm like, who is Peter Sarsgaard's henchman? That's a striking-looking gentleman.
Oh, yeah.
Who is that?
I didn't recognize
him
either.
Who is that?
Yeah.
Come to the closing credits. Cam Gigandet.
The formerly useless Cam Gigandet.
The never good in anything Cam Gigandet, who has like sunk I don't know how many movies. Turns out...
No, not single-handedly. He is unfortunately cast in a lot of garbage movies.
Okay, yes, fair
We
enough.
Don't know what kind of actor he
that's
is.
That's true.
Because he's never been allowed to
that's
do
true.
So.
That's true. Like you know, Burlesque and The Roommate could have happened to anybody.
Yeah.
Turns out...
The Roommate.
You put a beard...
That's a fun movie.
You put a beard on Cam Gigandet, and he has screen presence.
He has some screen presence, yeah.
So go figure.
Well, the beards are in... epic supply in this
film.
Central casting said beards. Like that was the call. That was the call they put out? Beards.
Look, not since the late 1960s has it been easier to cast a Western background with bearded gentlemen.
Right.
So, you know, that's all. I'm not even going to give them points for that.
What are you looking for in this movie? Beards. All kinds. All the beards.
Tailored, mangy, you name it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just thought it was eh, and you thought it was eh plus, I guess.
Yeah, it's eh plus. I saw it with Gary Cotti, and he said, it's studio notes, the Western.
Yes, it does. That's it's a fair cop.
But I, you know, it's a quick 2 hours.
I didn't think so. I thought it was this could be 20 minutes shorter.
Magnificent hours. Seven, the first was 2.5.
Yeah, but it didn't feel like 2.5 the way this one feels, right. Like a long 2.
Yeah.
The delight, surprise, go see it, great movie of the weekend.
I won't call it great, but you keep talking.
It's pretty great. I think it's real good in any event. Is Mira Nair's Queen of Katwe, which Disney opened on like 52 screens this weekend. It's going to go wider next weekend. And when it goes wider, go see it.
Yeah, I mean, I recommend it. It's quite good. Tell the people.
It is a sports movie. It is a true story about a young girl living in Katwe, which is a...
Named
Fiona. She lives in a slum in Uganda. And turns out to have a great mind for chess. And David Oyelowo plays Robert, who is an engineer who is between jobs. So he takes a part-time gig
He also works through some Christian ministry.
That's what I'm getting to. Okay. Yeah. He takes a part-time job at a Christian ministry that does like sports outreach. And there are a lot of the kids... are forbidden by their mother to play football because it's too expensive to take them to the hospital to fix broken bones.
Yep.
So he goes, well, I know something else you can do, and starts teaching the kids how to play chess. And Fiona kind of wanders in one day, and they start teaching her how to play chess, and she starts kicking everyone's ass. Her mother is played by Lupita Nyong'o, and she is a single woman trying to raise 4 children, and life is hard, and Fiona's chess might spell a better life for her and her brother to get education and to help the family. And Mira Nair, who I've always respected as a filmmaker, in this film has the emotional button pushing skills of Steven Spielberg at his best.
Yeah.
She was working me like a puppet the whole time.
Yeah.
There were about 18 times in this movie that I almost burst into tears until I finally did at the end.
When you and I are sitting in an actual movie theater, having bought tickets.
Yes.
Depending on the theater, we are either right next to each other, or if the seats are too small, we give each other the fatness seat.
Yes.
And
the fat bro seat.
But the seats at AMC are nice, and so we sat right next to each other. And being as familiar with your body as I am over the past 21 years, I know just from how you shake a little bit when you're about to start crying in a movie. You do a little...
It's a tremor.
Your body vibrates in a very specific way when you're about to start crying in a movie.
I get the St. Vitus dance.
Like, all I have to be doing is having my arm next to your arm touching it, and I know what's going on. And it was a routine experience watching this film with you. You were, like, choking up a good 10 times.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel fewer feelings than you. In general.
as a rule.
And so it didn't get me until the end when the big climax thing happens and then the credits. And I just gonna, the second thing that happens is not a spoiler plot wise, but apparently it's a thing that can make me get choked up too. Do you remember seeing the prize winner of Defiance, Ohio?
I knew you were going to mention that.
Okay. At the end of the prize winner of Defiance, Ohio, Julianne Moore is sitting on the steps of the house. And seated next to her is Terry Ryan, who wrote the book, the prize winner of Defiance, Ohio, about her own mother.
Right.
And her mother in the film is played by Julianne Moore. And I can't remember now who kisses who on the cheek, but it's like I just dissolved into tears. And so the very same thing happens over these credits. Everyone in real life, one by one, comes out and stands next to the actor who played them. And that's all they do. And the actors are sort of like, the actors are doing a thing. Every time the person comes to stand next to them, the actors are doing a thing like, there he is. Like, oh my God, they don't guys. They don't point to the person, but like, Lupita Nyong'o has this way about her that sort of is like, do you see? Do you see? Look, right here. This is the actual mom. And it makes you cry. So,
Medina Nalwanga, who plays Fiona.
Yes.
First film.
She's lovely.
First film. I don't know where they found her. I don't know.
Uganda.
I don't know what her future is, and I hope she has one because she's so good in
she's
this.
She's so sweet and adorable.
And Oyelowo is so great, and Lupita Nyong'o is so great.
This is a very heartwarming in an old-fashioned way.
Yeah, but in the good way. Like, what Disney makes the sports movie every year, and when they get it right, you get this or you get The Rookie, and when they get it wrong, you get John Hamm in India.
Right. Yeah, that was a bummer.
But this one is right. This is them doing it right, and you got to go see this movie. You got to go see this movie because it's directed by an Indian woman, and there's not a single white person with dialogue in the entire film.
That's true. There's none. Zero white folks, which means this pretty good movie is essential.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's, as the kids say on the internet, what? I had... All the feels. All of them.
Yeah, yeah. I had fewer because...
You're dead inside.
I'm dead inside. I like Mira Nair's films.
Mm-hmm.
I like how warm they are.
Mm.
They're visually warm.
Yeah.
And they're emotionally warm. And she's very generous that way. She sometimes, for my taste, does not restrain that enough.
Hmm.
But I forgive it because I don't see enough from her. Right. And I don't see enough in general. Films by women, about women, doing good things in the world, and moving me. There just aren't enough of those.
I mean, it's interesting because this is a movie where... where race is taken out of the equation because everybody in this movie
is from Uganda.
So it's about gender and it's about class. It is so about class.
It is very much about class, like, distinctions. Yes.
You know, talk about your scrappy underdogs.
Overtly.
Yeah, like the girl from the slums who comes in and they get into this chess tournament at this fancy college and they're looking around and everybody's like playing, you know, cricket and it's all the manicured fields and the tennis courts and da-da-da. And they come in and she shakes hands with like the school's chess champion who wipes his hand on the tablecloth after he shakes her hand.
Yeah.
And then the guy running the tournament tells David Oyelowo, "Oh, very smart of you to put your worst player against our best one, you know, or in the early rounds." And it's like, "No." And then she cleans his clock. Yeah. It's great.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. Okay. I don't play chess.
No.
I don't understand chess. I don't know what's happening during the chess sequences, but the way they're edited and the way they're scored, they become really tense anyway.
Yeah.
You know.
That's true.
Like, because if I watch a football movie or a basketball movie, I have some idea of, like, what the score is or where they are on the field.
You know what's supposed to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. So even going in as somebody who does not understand the game of chess in the slightest, Nair and her team make those matches riveting.
I would like, and this is not a critique so much of the film as it is a critique of the world we live in where there aren't enough films about why countries like Uganda have such crushing poverty.
Mm.
Reason, British colonialism.
Right.
There aren't enough films that deal with, you know, There aren't enough mainstream, American studio films that teach you anything about the world.
Yeah.
And I don't mean these films should be like history lessons or historical dramas or anything stodgy
Just
or dull.
part of the context, though.
But within the context of this film, it would have been good to have had a 10-second, 30-second thing about, here's why we're poor. Here's why we all say shillings. And because it's not, when you've been crushed by an outside force,
Right.
and then the movie is like, here she goes, gonna pull herself up by her bootstraps when no one else even has boots, and she actually doesn't have boots either, but she has like a supernatural power to do
Right.
this.
Well,
This she's special and gets to do this
she
thing.
is the 8-year-old kid in the project who plays
I
basketball.
understand that.
But in an American movie, we know why they're in the
I
project.
need
And
more. I need more. And
this is a
I
Disney
also
movie, and
need,
I don't know if they
I
were ever
know,
going to do
I
that.
also need more films that are not exclusively about the suffering of people of color. Because that is the other thing that this strikes a note of is suffering for the consumption of people who will never experience this sort of thing. And I, again, it's not the movie's fault. It's the
Right.
world's fault that we don't get enough of everything else.
I will say that at
Because this
least.
is a sweet, charming, lovely, moving movie that is full of feeling.
At least in the case of Nair,
Yeah.
this is not a filmmaker sort of swooping in,
No, that is not. It is not. That's what I'm saying.
telling a
It's
story about terrible stuff
she's not like
and then
that.
skedaddling because she was, I think, raised in Uganda.
Yes.
Runs a film school
I
there, which
understand.
actually Lupita Nyong'o used to attend before becoming an
Yeah.
actress. So she knows the terrain, and I'm sure, much like.
Nothing that I'm saying is the fault of Mira
No,
Nair
I
or
understand.
Lupita Nyong'o or any
I
yeah.
understand, but I just want to point out how this film was different. In the way that, like, when Alison Anders made Mi Vida
Mi Vida
Loca,
Loca,
and
right.
she did not just sort of swoop
I
in, make this
understand.
movie about, like, the East Side Girls and then go
I'm
away.
glad you brought that up
She
because that's not what
actually.
I was getting at all.
Right,
Yeah.
but I want to give this movie credit where it's due.
Yeah. No one's
It
exploiting anyone
right,
here.
in the
Yeah.
same way that like Alison Anders like remained in touch with that community, I think adopted one of the babies from one of the people in the film who
Oh, did
died.
she?
Yeah, I
Oh, I didn't
believe
know that.
so.
Yeah.
Nair is already connected to this community in this country.
Yes.
And thankfully, there is no comment about like the horrifying homophobia that has been imported to Uganda by American evangelical churches.
Right.
If you want to find out about that, go watch the documentary "God Loves Uganda."
Right. You should watch that documentary too.
But seriously, go see Queen of Katwe. It's so
It's
good,
lovely.
and it's the kind of movie that needs support so that they'll make more of them.
Right. Got a DVD recommendation for the week?
I have two.
Oh wait, did we see something else?
Oh,
Dressmaker.
Dressmaker. Yes, thank you.
Dressmaker. You
Right.
saw
I
that.
saw Dressmaker.
Yeah.
Dressmaker.
Make it fast.
Okay, fine. Well, Jocelyn Morehouse, speaking of women directors,
Yeah,
is
yeah.
back after a long absence, and
Yeah.
I asked her where she'd been because I did a Q&A with her this week for Outfest.
Oh, did you?
She and her husband PJ Hogan, who did Muriel's Wedding, and they've worked together on a lot of stuff. She produced his extraordinary Peter Pan, which you should really see if you have not.
Oh yeah, he made that.
Yeah.
That was a good Peter
That was
Pan
a very good
that
Peter
nobody went
Pan.
to see.
Yes. They have two autistic children.
Oh, do they?
Yeah. And it was a thing where the kids responded to her, and so she kind of needed to be there and raise them directly and educate them directly until they got old enough to, be better at being out in the world. So she took like 15 years off. She's been gone for a while raising her
Oh.
family, but now she's back.
Oh,
And,
interesting.
because I think the last movie she made before this was 1,000 Acres.
What was that?
And that
Remind
was
me.
that. It's like King Lear on the Prairie with like Jessica Lange was in it.
I don't think I saw that.
Okay. She did How to Make an American Quilt and Proof, which is a movie that I love from the early 90s. That
Yeah,
was one of her breakthrough movie.
Baby Russell Crowe.
Baby Russell Crowe and Baby Hugo Weaving. Hugo Weaving is in The Dressmaker. So The Dressmaker stars Kate Winslet, and she plays a woman named Tilly, who is a fabulous designer who returns to this miserable, dusty, outback Australian town that she had abandoned years earlier, to settle old scores and solve old mysteries. And her mother's played by Judy Davis, who also we haven't seen in a movie in a while, who's kind of the town loon. We find out that when Kate Winslet was a kid, a classmate of hers died under mysterious circumstances, and everybody sort of blamed her, and she's really not even sure what happened, so she has to figure out whether or not that she actually murdered somebody, and she has some revenge to take on some of the townspeople who treated her and her mother like crap. And she brings gorgeous gowns to the town, you know. So this is a miserable, dusty town where people are just like walking around like they just came out of Dior or something. It's set in the 50s. And so at first you think it's going to be like Chocolat, you know, where like the outsider breezes in and, you know, like shows everyone the sensual delights. But no. It's more like a spaghetti Western because she has revenge on her mind. It's a little overdone at times. Mm-hmm. There's that Australian sense of humor that can be just a little broad, I think, for Americans.
Do you think?
I think there are some movies. I think there are Australian movies that do well here, and I think it's because they hit the sweet spot. I think there are other Australian movies that don't do as well here because they're a little too broad.
What do you think, Australian listeners?
Tell me if I'm
wrong. Is Alonso stupid?
This movie's already been a pretty big hit around the world. We're like the last people to get it, I think. It played at Toronto last year.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, Liam Hemsworth is in it and he's charming and, you know, thank you, female gaze. You get to see him in his underwear. And, Kate Winslet can like, you know, there's a scene where all she has to do is show up at the footy match and like just wear a tight red dress and smoke and everybody goes bananas and you believe it. Like she totally sells that moment. I found some of it a little overdone, but for the most part, it's fun and it's fun to look at, and the dresses are great, and there is some really sort of just delicious revenge and just delicious, like, just these shots of Kate Winslet just being a badass and swathed in couture, you know. So it's worth checking out.
Is it art house? Is it streaming?
It's at the moment it's art house, but it's being released by Broadgreen and Amazon, so I imagine it's coming to Amazon at some point.
Did any of y'all go to the art house day yesterday?
Yeah, I totally missed it.
Was it called? Art House Appreciation Day or something like that?
National Art House Day.
National Art House Day, like Record Store Day, now for art house movie theaters.
Yeah.
Did any of y'all do
anything?
If you actively participated in Art House Day or went to an art house theater because it was Art House Day, I want to know.
What went down?
Write to us at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. I want to know because I didn't do it. And when I heard about it, I thought, oh, that sounds like the day that I don't want to go to the art house.
Like Record Store Day.
Just like Record Store Day. I mean, I go to the art house all the time.
Right.
I buy the ticket. I go. In general, if I know a movie is, well, frankly, if an art house, if a film that's destined for the art house is opening in Los Angeles, very, very often the publicists, they won't even have a press screening. They'll send you an online screener that you have to watch on your laptop and that glitches and stops and starts and fails. Or you'll get a DVD sent to you and you never get to see it on a screen. And so often what I will do is just simply refuse to watch the film that way. I remember Cemetery of Splendor, they were going to send us an online link. And I was like, no. And so I went and bought my ticket.
Yeah.
So, and I'm doing that on a Tuesday afternoon, on a Thursday afternoon. So the idea of being packed into a theater with people who are like, it's Art House Day, like that does not appeal to me. But if it worked, I want to know, did you go to one theater and did they do anything special?
Yeah. Well, the one special thing that I wanted to go to, they weren't doing anywhere near us, which was apparently there are two new shorts with the A Town Called Panic characters.
Oh, God, yes.
Which I hope is coming out on DVD at some point. But anyway, they were screening in all these theaters for like one show during National Art House Day.
A Town Called Panic is this insane movie. It's Belgian, right? Yeah.
Belgian stop motion animation.
Yeah. And when you say stop motion animation, what you really mean is like figures that jerk along. Like they're not making these. This is not
The stop motion, the stop motion animation that you made in fifth grade.
Leica. It's the most chaotic, wild, anarchic kids movie
Yeah, it's genius.
that I have seen in years and years and years, and I love it so much. And now there's a new short film, like Town Called Panic Christmas or something like
It's
that.
something like that, like two
A
shorts.
Christmas Called Panic, or I don't know what it's called. It has to come out on DVD soon.
I'm sure it will.
I can't get enough of that. If you've never seen A Town Called Panic, that's my DVD pick of this week. You must. It will make you so happy and make you laugh so much.
You will giggle in a way you have not in a while, probably. I have two DVD picks this week, both inspired by Queen of Katwe.
Oh, and by the way, I saw, I guess there's an English dub of A Town Called Panic
Oh, is
for
there?
America. I don't know. I think there might be, but I saw it in the
Subtitled.
French, and that made it even weirder.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'd watch the subtitled one if it were me.
For sure. So yes, I have two DVD picks, both inspired by Queen of Katwe. One is Mississippi Masala, which was
Oh, yeah.
Amir Nair's second film. She premiered with the super bummer Salaam Bombay, also a movie about kids in the slums. But the second one is set in the United States about a small community of South Asians living in Mississippi. Denzel Washington of The Magnificent Seven is the romantic lead, and I remember watching this movie thinking, this guy is going to be the new Cary Grant. I'm not sure what Denzel Washington is. I guess he just became
He's
Denzel
just
Washington.
Denzel
He
Washington,
carved his own place, but he's so charming and romantic and sweet in this movie. Not muscles he's flexed on in movies lately. I can't think of the last time he was like just I guess it's funny though. I said he was the new Cary Grant, and then he was in The Preacher's Wife.
You
So
know what
there you
Mira
go.
Nair movie I liked? I'm about to sneeze, so pause
Gesundheit.
it.
Oh, fine. Gesundheit. What Mira Nair movie do you like?
I liked Vanity Fair.
Oh,
I
God.
really did.
That one did not work for
I
me.
liked Vanity Fair. I did not like The Reluctant Fundamentalist,
That was
but I
terrible.
liked Vanity Fair.
I like Monsoon Wedding.
I like Monsoon Wedding.
I didn't see Kama Sutra.
I saw The Perez Family. That was okay.
Didn't see that one.
Yeah.
And then my other DVD pick this week, because it's the other great chess movie that I know, is Searching for Bobby Fischer.
Yeah, that's a good one too.
Which is a lovely film, and it again, I don't play chess, but it put me into the mindset of someone who does, and it's a really lovely little character piece with a lot of great performances. I think it's like Bibbs's favorite movie.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going suit shopping with Bibbs like we were planning on.
No, I heard.
He's not wearing a suit to his wedding.
Is this public information that we should be talking about?
He didn't say it was private.
All right then.
Should I not be talking about
I don't
this?
know, maybe you shouldn't.
Okay. Well, he and Michelle are going to wear special outfits.
Yes.
It's going to be so great.
And no, they are not like cosplaying, I
And once
promise. He's not going to be dressed as the doctor or anything.
Yeah, maybe I'm not supposed to talk about this.
Maybe you
I
shouldn't.
don't know. But after the wedding, all bets are off. I'll be telling you all
Oh,
about
well,
it.
yeah.
We're going to
No,
report
photos on
that
Facebook.
wedding is going to be reported about on this podcast.
Heck yeah.
Here's an iTunes review
Oh, hooray.
that we got. This is from Robilla the Robot Gorilla.
That was, I think, square in our demo.
Subject line. I get embarrassed when I read these things. Subject line is, I wish I had a blanket made out of Dave White's voice. It would be cashmere, because that is very soft. Usually, I don't like podcasts that start with 15 minutes of personal life chit chat. Well.
Welcome.
But Dave and Alonzo are raconteurs who are always fun to listen to. As film slash TV critics, they cover everything from obscure foreign art to doltish trash, and they know how to use films as springboards to important discussions. Go ahead and join their Patreon so you can get their TV podcast, where high-minded art snob Dave transforms into a glutton for reality TV stupidity.
It's true.
Yet they continue to make robust connections between entertainment and real-life issues.
Well, thank you, Rubilla the Gorilla.
I gotta say, you know, when I go deep with the Finding Prince Charming and
Rob and China.
Oh, you guys. You guys. Rob and China is such a good show. I'm not kidding. It is. Black China is one of my new sort of Machiavellian heroes.
The only thing I like about her is that she is actively annoying.
Oh God,
Kris Jenner.
Kris Jenner hates Black China so much, and you can see it in beautiful 30-minute chunks on Rob and China, and then you can hear us talking about it on LKTV, which can be yours for $4 per month on Patreon. I got some other letters.
Okay.
And I gotta pull them up. Why don't you pause it while I pull them up? So this letter is from Eli. Subject line, you guys are great.
Oh, thanks, Eli.
And then you open the email and it says, but enough with the small talk. Here's a list of my approximate top 10 favorite movies.
Okay.
Number 1, Punch Drunk Love.
Still never seen it.
Number 2, Amelie.
Okay.
Number 3, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Okay.
Number 4, In Bruges.
Yeah.
I love that, In Bruges.
Yeah.
Number 5, Once.
Oh, yeah, nice. Yeah.
Number 6, Groundhog Day.
Sure.
Number 7, something called Zero Motivation. Parenthetically, he adds, an incredible Israeli film about an all-female administration office in the Israeli army. Don't know it. Never seen it. Get a benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
Number 8, Kill Bill Volume 1.
Okay.
Number 9, The Believers. Which one is that?
There was an old horror movie called that, but I think more recently it was a documentary.
Why don't you look that up? Yeah. Number 10, Damsels in Distress. Guess what, Eli? You get 100% knife. Your list is 100% knife because we've never seen Zero Motivation.
And Dave will dance the Sambola.
I will. Unless you are a playboy or
operator type.
Operator type.
There's several believers.
Yeah, which one is he talking about?
I don't know. There's
Eli, which believers are you talking about?
There's a couple of horror movies. There's a 2013 documentary about religion.
No, that might be it. What's that one? How come I don't know about that?
It's not from anyone I've ever heard of.
Hmm. And he says, and if you will indulge me, of course we will. He says, here are my 10 favorites of 2016 so far. Number 1, Swiss Army Man.
You were not a fan. I didn't see it.
I did not like it. Number 2, Tickled. Oh, God. Tickled is... you guys, watch Tickled, please. It's the weirdest movie about competitive tickling that isn't really about competitive tickling. It's... yeah. Why don't you go back and listen to the episode of Linoleum Knife where we talk about Tickled, and we'll explain it all to you.
Exactly.
What are you looking up? What are you saying?
Okay, I'm still looking at The Believers. This is a 2012 documentary. Follows how two scientists have coped with ruined reputations after announcing the discovery of cold fusion in 1989, even as a community of believers continues to search for evidence of its truth. Maybe he means that one.
Maybe. Number 3, Hunt for the Wilder People. We just got that DVD
in
the mail.
Need to watch it.
I haven't watched it yet. The Lobster.
Yeah.
Eye in the Sky, which I did not see.
I did not see either. I heard okay.
Microbe and Gasoline, which was here for a week and then gone.
We reviewed it. I had somebody review it for The Wrap, and he really liked it.
I missed that one, too, although everyone's saying it's Michel Gondry's, like, best thing in a while.
Hmm.
Les Innocents, which I have not seen.
That's the one about the nuns who were raped by Nazis.
Yes. Pregnant. And that also played here for a week.
It's directed by the woman who made Adore.
Oh my.
And Coco Before Chanel. But oh. I hear better things about this one.
Les Cowboys, again, it played here for a week and I didn't get to see it.
Yeah, Robert reviewed it for me at the Rap.
Love and Friendship.
Yeah.
And Sing Street.
Yeah.
I'd love to hear your thoughts on my cinematic taste. It stinks. How do you like that?
Well, obviously you're a John Carney fan, and I endorse this. If you got Once on your top 10 and Sing Street on your top 10 of this year. No, these are good choices. And you've been seeing more French films than we have, so there.
You've been getting out to the movie theater faster than I could. I hate it when things are only here for a week.
I know. I bet he went to Art House Day.
This is from Daniel. Hi, Dave and Alonzo. I did download the 2 Days, One Night commentary.
Yay.
But I don't want to listen to it until I've seen the movie.
That's wise.
But as someone who works a 9-to-5 office job, the very premise of this film triggers me. I will work up the strength at some point. You know, it's funny. The world of 9-to-5 office jobs versus the world of what you and I do, which is freelancing with little checks that come in sporadically and haphazardly and make it your budget and financial life a constant juggling act and curie. You know, you're always curious, like, I wonder if money will come into the mailbox this week or not. And
plus the fact that, like,
I don't know which is less secure sometimes. What were you going to say?
I was going to say, also, if you have a 9-to-5 job, you know that after 5, you're off. And we spend most of the week.
I'm not talking about that. I'm not talking about, like, how long you're at work. I'm talking about the feeling of job security.
I understand that, but I'm just saying there's something about being able to schedule your life in a way, whereas, like, most of our weeknights are off seeing a movie somewhere.
I am very happy with the way you and I do it as two freelancers, because you do What the Flick, and you work for Outfest, and you are an occasional professor, and you
work at the Rap.
Work for the Rap, and I write a non-bylined entertainment column every week that no one should care about at all. But I've been doing for 14 years, for the same company, and I never talk about it because it's just one of those little checks that shows up regularly once a month. And I can always count on it to show up in the last week of the month. And there's a couple $100 that just pops into the world for me. You know, we have created this business out of a podcast where, money happens every month, and then most of that money goes back into buying merchandise to send to the subscribers, and the other part of that money goes to the post office to send the merchandise to the subscribers. But you and I have cobbled together a living-ish out of these freelance checks, and if one of those jobs goes away, we haven't lost our entire income.
Yeah, they're not holding up the entire Jenga tower.
Right. And so, but if you work a 9-to-5 job and you get laid off and you don't have any severance coming, or you work for jerks that don't believe in that,
or you're a contract so you don't get unemployment.
Yeah, you're
SOL.
Sunk unless you've got backup. Sometimes I think the way you and I do it makes for a more secure life. Like, because who out there working a 9-to-5 job doesn't worry about whether or not they're going to lose their job? Always.
And we've been in the position where we had our eggs in too few baskets, and those baskets got taken away.
Yeah. No, I mean, if you're a freelancer, you need to have a variety of gigs so that you're not reliant on just one big thing or two or three big things, because if those two or three big things all go away at the same time, then you too are also sunk.
Yeah.
And we have been in that situation. But, like, everyone has been in that situation at some point. It's not like the olden times where if you had a job, you could stay at that job for 40 years and never quit.
Right.
And at the end, they give you an actual pension.
And a gold watch.
And yeah. And the company never moved away or shipped your job off to another country or anything like that. That's the olden times.
Yeah, that doesn't happen anymore.
And so I think everyone everywhere is all the time worried about their job.
Probably, yeah. I think that's that is the economy. That's the world that we live in right now. And that's what makes the movie, I think, so relevant. And yeah, you should check it out. I mean, yes, it's tough and it's challenging, but you know, I think it's worth seeing. And you know, there's a great performance by the actress that Wendy Williams refers to as a woman named Marion.
Yes. he continues. Also, Dave, weirdly, I also made a replica of the Escape to Witch Mountain case.
Ah.
I'd forgotten that I talked about that.
Yeah.
Show and tell, book report show and tell in elementary school. Bless you. I made... Dang, sneezy.
Excuse me.
I made a star case from Escape to Witch Mountain because it was a novelization of the book, or maybe it was based on a book. The movie was based on a book. I don't know if the movie was based on a book or if the book came after.
I think it was the book first, but I'm not sure.
Anyway, I loved that movie. I read the book. I made a little star case for my book report project.
See, these kids today, they don't make anything. They just go to the Disney store and they buy the crap.
I guess.
I
made it for class. I made it for my school project.
I'm just saying, nowadays, though, they would make the star case in China and mass market them, you know, because...
Well, you might still have to make something for a class project, though.
I suppose.
Yeah. Do you know what you're talking about at all?
I'm just saying that when I was a little kid and obsessed with movies and television, I did not have the array of, like...
Tie-in merch. Right.
That exists now.
Anyway, he says, I made a replica of the Escape to Witch Mountain case. I had some shiny blue cardboard. And also a small reproduction of the room with all the toys in the mad scientist's house. That's amazing.
Wow.
Continuing to love the show, Daniel.
Thanks, Daniel.
This is from Ryan. Hey, Dave and Alonzo, I would first like to apologize in advance for not jumping onto the linoleum knife bandwagon sooner. Like most listeners, I discovered this podcast through Mr. Duralde's involvement on What the Flick, and have been actively listening in every week after hours of catching up. I have been a fan of Mr. Duralde's reviews since the beginning of What the Flick, and I watch the show religiously every week when it's on.
Oh, well, thanks.
My love for film criticism began when I was in middle school, and one of the first critics I actively followed and read was Mr. White's reviews back when he wrote for Movies.com. I was 13 then, and I'm 24 now. I worked for Movies.com for 10 years.
Yeah. Yep.
So in a way, Mr. White, you were my first.
And you never forget your first.
Imagine my pleasant surprise years later when I began reading and watching Mr. Duralde's reviews, only to find out that you two were both married to each other. It was somewhat of a serendipitous moment for me, as I hadn't read Mr. White's reviews in quite some time and began reading your material again after the aforementioned revelation. Anyways, I just wanted to let you know that you both have been important figures in my life when it comes to film. And like you, I am a big gay film nerd. My love for moving pictures began when I was 4 after seeing Pulp Fiction.
We're calling Child Protective Services.
Who raised you?
Ouch.
Which at the time I could not comprehend, yet I was mesmerized nonetheless. Hopefully one day I can compile a list of some of my favorite films for you to go over, but first I must take the time to condense, as I have a list of over 300 films, and the titles keep on expanding. Thank you very much for taking the time to read this letter. I hope to write back again to you soon. All my love, Ryan in Long Beach.
That's so sweet.
P.S. Send my love to Ben, Matt, and Christy.
I will.
Thank you, Ryan.
Better late than never. Whenever you start listening is a good time to start listening.
I'm feeling all heartwarmed now.
That was adorable.
That's it. We're done.
Okay. So, yeah, you know. Join our club, patreon.com/linoleumknife. Go listen to our friends on the internet. Go to christylemire.com and check out the Rotten Tomatoes podcast. Listen to Bibbs and Whitney, to the B-Movies podcast, and Cancel Too Soon. Check out the Schmoes Know, Dennis, anyone with Dennis Hensley, the Joel Ryan thing, the Sewers of Paris, the Comics Canon, Fat Guys, the Movies, the Criterion Cast, Film Spotting, SVU, the Game Night Guys, and Secretly Timid. Thank you, Blue, as always, for our wonderful theme music. If you want to find out more about his amazing stuff, go visit him at bluetopia.com, BLEUTOPIA. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram at LinoleumCast. You can stream the show at Stitcher Radio or The Lounge, certain devices, Google Play, and Satchel, the new one on me. There was a thing that, oh yeah, go subscribe at iTunes and leave us a review like Robilla the Robot Gorilla did. It does help people find the show.
Yeah.
There's a gajillion movie podcasts out there, so anything that we can do to help to float a little higher always helps us out. Yeah, I guess that's it. If you want to drop us a line, linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. We are trying to get caught up on letters. We may wind up doing another all letter episode soon.
I think what's going to happen is we're going to do an extra episode where we'll do like a make me. I'll make you watch something, you make me watch something, and then we'll do some letters after that.
Oh, okay. That could work.
Because that'll take a whole episode.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
All right. Well, anyway, thank you all for listening. We couldn't do it without you, and we'll be here next week. We hope you are too.
Goodbye.